Hello, and welcome to the Muslim Sheroes of Minnesota podcast, where we spotlight the Muslim women of the Minnesota community. My name is Nosheena Hussain, and I'm the executive director of RISE, Reviving the Islamic Sisterhood for Empowerment. Our mission is to amplify the voice and power of Muslim women through storytelling, leadership development, and civic engagement. What is a Shiro? A Shiro is a female trailblazer who is creating change in her community. She takes risks, she challenges misconceptions, and addresses injustices. Shiros are on a mission to build a better world, and the sisterhood is here to support them and lift their voices.
Meet Maya Soriano. Maya is a teacher and a leader in Montessori education, which places the autonomy of each child at the center of learning. Maya is the co-founder of Lirio, a micro Montessori school that provides instruction and immersion in both English and Spanish. She believes that liberatory early childhood education is essential in cultivating strong, young leaders of color.
So my story is a little unique in that I am a revert. So I grew up in a non-Muslim household and was not Muslim growing up. But I was born in South Korea and I was adopted as an infant by a white couple who lived here in Minnesota. So I spent my childhood in the Twin Cities, in St. Paul, and then we moved to the suburbs when I was like 9 and had a very, like, I guess more Christian-centered household, but very open. Like, in particular, my father was very interested in all religions. So we studied Taoism, Quaker ways. My mom grew up Catholic. So there's definitely like an overall acceptance of different faiths and different diversity of different types of people and their communities and the thinking that they had. Like in terms of, we talk about like that, I know there have been questions about like your identity as a Muslim. I think as a transracial like adoptee, the identity is always something you're trying to figure out, especially when you're adopted by a white couple who is in like Midwestern state. So it's definitely, I see it as, you know, really challenged me to think about what it really means when we talk about like community, we talk about identity, and we talk about how we fit in and how we show up. I think actually my faith has really helped me feel okay with my identity and feel okay with the different identifiers that I hold, and that being like non-linear and dynamic versus like static. So that, but that's definitely what, as I was older, when I was younger, no, I just wanted to, yeah, I wanted to just fit in, be like part of something very much. So I had a chance to go back to Korea when I was in college to go meet my birth family. It was actually really heartbreaking in many ways, you know, going back to this whole idea of like identity and who do I connect with? Like, where is my group? Where do I fit in? I had always thought that like my birth family would be the ones that I would magically be drawn to and just know when you saw them growing up. You know, that was, you know, like that kind of princess fairy tale that I had, that there's this beautiful woman who I just not been able to keep me, and then let me, you know, I had to go and then would go back and find her one day. And so, yeah, when I went back to, I actually toured Asia in college through the chorus, because I was in the college choir where we toured around the world. And so when we stopped in Korea, we had a chance to go find my birth family, and I was able to find my birth mother. But the story they had given me was not what actually had happened. So they often will like modify or change the stories that come with the children to make them seem more like, I don't know, how to say, like desirable for a family, which is really kind of offsetting, but that's what had happened. And so, yeah, my birth mother had gone through a lot of trauma and really, really difficult, challenging life. And my birth father had essentially decided to give me up for adoption without telling her for many reasons. And then he ended up passing away. It was very sad and just not what I've been expecting. And so, yeah, it was a lot to take in when you were only like 19. But I think it also really, I mean, everything happens for a reason. So it really helped inform who I am as a person today. And especially when I had my own, started my own family, it really informed, you know, what that connection meant for me. And education has been the area of my whole professional career, so it's now an arc. I was just thinking the other day how long I've been teaching more. It's been a long time. Makes me feel very old. So I think part of when we think about like my professional journey, it really started like when I had the opportunity to participate in essentially like a Montessori like high school. I attended the School of Environmental Studies, which really opened my mind to like the world outside our little bubble. It's where I learned about environmental justice, social justice. We were reading works by Gandhi, by the Dalai Lama, by all these thinkers from around the world that were really promoting social justice and human rights. And so that really oriented like myself to just thinking like, what is my purpose here? Like, how am I going to serve the greater good? Which in we think of Montessori, which became another really strong influence in my life. The goal of human development is to prepare yourself and become independent, you know, when you're little and autonomous, the child, to feel empowered to then look outward and serve humanity. Like, that is the arc of development within Montessori. And also resonates a lot with a lot of the values we have as Muslims in terms of, you know, compassionately connecting with our community and serving, you know, for justice. So that really started in high school when I was at that special charter program. Then in college, I went to a Catholic liberal arts university up in St. Joseph, the College of St. Benedict. And I ended up traveling abroad, became fluent in Spanish, really loved the work I did when I was in Guatemala, and studied psychology and peace studies, but could do nothing with it when I graduated with a four-year degree and didn't want to go right into grad school. So I joined Teach for America and was in Los Angeles. So that's where I started formally teaching, was when I was in Los Angeles. Got my feet wet, essentially being like thrown into the classroom with no teaching experience, and then taught in inner LA at an amazing charter school, and then just decided to stay with teaching. So I was teaching kindergarten and first grade, and then moved back to Minnesota and continued to be interested in education, but moved to an immersion setting where I was primarily working with the Latino community, but teaching as well in Spanish in a two-way immersion setting. I had worked primarily with the Latino community as well when I was working in LA. And so education has just been something I was really passionate about. And again, like the goal being providing space. I love the idea that we, as teachers, we are the facilitators and the keepers of space for children to like transform and to come into themselves. And I never understood really that there was a philosophy for what that meant until I found Montessori or stumbled upon Montessori. Because the idea of like student-driven learning where they were the center of kind of their own instruction and I was there to support, facilitate, you know, pull out in small groups. We had created kind of like a small community of children who were essentially running their own classroom, you know, when I was teaching. And then when I found that there was like a pedagogy that promoted that in Montessori and many, to be quite honest, other indigenous types of educational approaches. Montessori is just the one that has become the most mainstream coming from Italy. I knew that that's what I wanted to pursue. So yep, I got trained at the Montessori Center of Minnesota, got my AMI diploma, ended up going eventually back to get my master's in education with a Montessori focus from St. Kate's. Dabbled in administration at a local charter as a dean of students. Learned a lot about school administration, a lot about working with children from various backgrounds, how to de-escalate, working with families and staff, and really was then convinced that being in a teacher-led school where we were really in partnership with families in a micro model was where I felt I could do my best work. And then what led me to where I am now, which is I also co-lead the Wildflower Equity Initiative, was I love being on the ground, you know, seeing what's happening in community. I truly believe community has a lot of the answers for what needs to happen. There's just been systemic reasons why often they don't have access or the voice, they're not given the space to voice what the solutions need to be. So when we were opening our school, and I really struggled with finding another BIPOC teacher leader who was from the community, and we were really wanting to work with the Latino community, and I really wanted to support creating a pipeline of teachers of color who would be Montessori trained, either getting the training or who are already trained and were interested in opening community nestled schools through Wildflower. So Wildflower is a foundation that is actually, it's national, that supports teacher-led micro Montessori schools to open in their communities. And so I partnered with one of my former classmates from college who has done a lot of activist work, education work, and he and I co-lead the Wildflower Equity Initiative. The Equity Initiative has three functions. The first was through the Fellows cohort to support teacher leaders of color to opening their own Montessori schools that are with Wildflower. And then the second is through working on teacher pipeline of getting folks trained or getting them the credentials they need to be Montessorians and teachers of record in their classrooms. So it's a lot of policy work, a lot of partnerships with the community and institutions. And then the third is through the Doherty Family School at the St. Thomas. We're working an intern. There's an interns program, so supporting youth of color who are interested in education to be able to be in the classroom at micro teacher-led and BIPOC-led schools for them to see what it looks like, what that could look like. And we had supported interns at our school for the last couple of years since we started partnering with the family college, and it was phenomenal. And our first intern who stayed with us for 2 years went into education to complete her four-year degree and teaching license. So just small little systems work like that has been incredibly such a privilege to be able to participate in and learn more about what people are doing and truly the like limitless capacity folks have to do amazing things if they're just given the space to flourish. The school that we've been able to create, like, it is such a space where we're trying, and obviously not perfect, but intentionally to really support the voices of folks of color. And it's the first time for me in a professional setting where I have been surrounded only with folks of color. And it's just so beautiful to be able to show up authentically that way and not have to explain yourself. And whether if that is because when I, you know, reverted to Islam, you know, that was that, then understanding that journey and that me praying during the day and us switching places so that I could do that. And just like the grace and the openness with that and not having to worry about not being like, she's not doing her job or like she's not at her, the top of her game. Like those extra layers of concern that sometimes happen that I've had that I didn't realize I was holding in until I was in a space where that wasn't an issue. So I think that has felt really a true privilege to be a part of, and really a healing space, I think, for a lot of us, for the many things that we've gone through as women, as mothers, you know, whatever faith that we're in, and obviously as women of color as well. So really, in that sense, Lirio, which is the name of our school, has provided that. And I truly believe when we create that type of dynamic as adults in the community that we work in, that trickles down to then the community with the children. You know, I always struggle with when we have this like disconnect between what we're telling children we want to create and then what we do with our peers, you know, and that goes back to, you know, children can sense that. You can sense that when you walk into space, and it's that authenticity. And we know that we're not perfect, and we are really though committed to engaging in the work to show up the best we can and support each other and challenge each other, and we want to trickle that into the communities that we work with and with the environments we create with the children. So we have a blend extended family. So I have two children who are ages 5 and 9. And then I also have some stepchildren. And my husband is Somali, and my children are Korean Mexican. We have a lot of mixture of cultures and ages in our group of children. They both went through Montessori. My eldest started in private Montessori and did receive Montessori in both private and public until we moved to the suburbs, which we did for academic reasons for him in particular. And then my youngest has been in Montessori as well. He actually attends a school like mine under the same charter, but it's an English school. It's definitely been challenging, as I'm sure for many families. I would say, first of all, and this is kind of tracing back to the Montessori, and just like when I learned about the approach to development and the child development from Montessori, it completely changed my world of how I saw my children. Like that overall, it just completely changed, transformed the way I see children and adults, but in particular children. And so I think, again, going back to when we're in this stressful time, as much as possible, trying to understand how that's also influencing my children and their fam and like their context, and just doing the best that we can to process that together. But it's definitely not easy. This is the story I hear from every family I talk to, trying to figure out how to get childcare, support their learning. But I think principally, like for me, it's making sure they just feel human and valued and loved and connected. And that's the thing we keep trying to tell parents and trying not to make our programming so like stressful, is that like, yes, like academics, absolutely. Like that's real and very important. And like, we are in unprecedented times. The most important is, do you still love each other at the end of the day? Because having worked at home with two children, all doing distance learning, you know, all being together, that in and of itself sometimes is a thing. Just making sure you still, you know, are there for each other. And that's, you know, what we try to do. I'm sure many educators will say, like, it's one thing with your students and then your own children. It can be very different for many ways. And I definitely see that. I tried to have my youngest in school with me when I opened. It was like this romantic notion of like, yes, I'm opening a school and my child's gonna, and it completely blew up in my face. He would not tolerate having me as his teacher and sharing his mom with other children. So I feel like it's just this is also one of those times we just have to follow what the children need, figure out what we need, and then compromise, like what's the best next step in a really challenging situation. Well, I think there can be a lot of healing and transformation to occur if we truly are able to put our resources into what we say, what we want, and getting educators to feel, well, first that teaching is a viable and sustainable option for them, and then also that alternative pedagogies like Montessori can be accessible. And then having a network of support to then open your own school with the community, I feel like it's really, you know, it could be an opportunity for communities to truly engage in some of that work for them to transform, you know. And you see that on a micro level when you open a school that's nestled in the community and they see the children outside, they see us taking walks around the neighborhood. You know, our first year we had a cohort of only 4 kindergartners and we were on the city bus. I took them around. This was before COVID. We went to the Somali market and went and got smoothies and went to La Morelia, which is the Latino market. So like they were visible in the community and folks were always asking like, who are these children? Like, what are they doing? You know, they would come around, they would, you know, ask, you know, what is your name? You know, what do you do? And the children are just, because of the freedoms and also the, just how Montessori works, like they love engaging in conversation and community has been like, okay, like this is, you know, we want to know more about what this is about. And that's led to not only more families, but also finding other community members who want to open their own schools. So I think really if we can commit to some of these different paths to supporting educational equity, we could see real changes happening in the future, more representation, you know, pathways for sustainable, supportive, like, spaces for teachers to do what they do best, which is teach and love our children. Actually happened to be a childcare provider of one of my good friend's children who went to my school. And she was like, well, you know, I run a lot of daycares, but I've always wanted to learn more Montessori. And I ended up, we connected and I introduced her to the center, and she got a scholarship to complete her training and is planning on converting her centers into Montessori schools for the community. So I feel like that is just being, even if it's a spark or even it's just an affirmation that it's possible, often is all that it takes. And I love being able to be part of that. So I would say, like, any community member, you know, when I'm chatting with other sisters just about work or just about parenting, I'm always happy to be a resource or to brainstorm on what that could look like for them. Yeah, and that for me is really exciting, and I feel like it could really bring momentum to our community and to educational justice for a lot of our students and a lot of our children, and being able to then push in the culture, like in a wildflower school, like if we wanted to open an Islamic type of wildflower school, if we wanted to open an Arab or Somali immersion program, like, why not? Like, if that's what a community wants, we should be able to do that. And I love the idea to be able to support a vision like that from our fellow Muslim community members. I think it does go back to dispelling the narrative of just that there's only one way to be Muslim, which is first one thing that I know, you know, I've struggled with as well, like that it is one of our many identifiers, and it might be, and it's a strong one for many of us, and we can be that and other things, right? And so I think that is really important for women not to feel limited by what doesn't feel authentic to them. Because when I see so many of the sisters who are doing amazing things, whether that's in whatever field that they are in or whatever community they're working with, they are strong. They're so compassionate. For a lot of them, it is faith-driven, which for me, having the feeling, the agency that can show up for you is really beautiful. They're very dignified and graceful, as so many of our, you know, teachings promote, but they're fierce. And I feel like that fierceness and that agency to stand up and voice for those who maybe don't have a voice or don't feel activated to use their voice is so important for our other women, as well as for our children to see as well, and the outside community to see.
Thank you to Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota for funding the Shiro's Project. To learn more about Shiro's and Reviving Sisterhood, visit us at www.revivingsisterhood.org. Find us on social media at Reviving Sisterhood on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you.